Hey, my name is James Proffitt. Thanks for stopping by for this episode of the Lake Effect Podcast. Today, I'm sitting here talking to fishing educator Lance Valentine. Hey, Lance. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate you having me.
I understand you used to be a banker. Is that the case?
We're going to start right there, huh? Yeah, I used to be a banker, you know, all those hours sitting in a bank and counting other people's money made me think that, man, you know, it's nice to have a good steady job and kind of do something. But man, I really wanted to do more with my life. There were things I wanted to do and some passions I had, and sitting at the bank really was not my passion, and just kind of found a way to kind of get out of there and get onto something I love to do.
Someone told me that you were a bad banker. Is that the case?
I was not a bad banker. I was a good banker. I was a rebel banker. Let's put it that way.
I heard a story about flip-flops and shorts.
I worked for a big bank. Worked at a branch. So I'm like, you know what? I just don't want to do this anymore. And I told my wife I'm going to quit. And she goes, oh, I don't care what you do. Just figure something out. So I went in on a Friday. We had a crappy meeting. And I'm sure anybody that's listening that works a corporate job understands these crappy Friday meetings that we have to go to. A lot of times I would come in shorts, flip-flops, t-shirt, and then I would for our meeting, and then I'd change. So the meeting gets done, and my boss looks at me and goes, hey, you gonna go change? He goes, yeah, I'm going to go change. It gets a little closer to opening time. You're going to go, yeah, I'll be ready. It gets a little closer. Yeah, I'll be ready. Well, 9:30 comes, the lights go on, the branch opens up, all the tellers are in their teller window, and I'm still sitting in my shorts and flip-flops. And I told my boss, who was a good friend of mine, I got to go in your office, we got to talk. And he says, oh, what's up? I says, I'm done. I guess somebody needs to count my till and balance me out. I'm finished.
What is a fishing educator?
Yeah, so...
Did you just make that up?
I just made that up. So I consider myself a fishing educator because I look at it this way. My job every day is to make sure that I provide information that's going to help somebody else catch more fish. That's what I consider my job to be. Now, that may be somebody watching one of our seminars. That may be somebody coming to a live event that we do. Maybe somebody reading a blog. And maybe a charter where I focus on... taking people fishing on a charter and hands-on, teaching them what we're doing, why we're fishing, where we're fishing, why we're using what we're using, the process of thinking about fishing, why I'm moving, why I'm using the lures I'm using, how to read the sonar, all those things. So every time that I am focused on fishing, it's not so much what I catch anymore like it was when I started in this tournament fishing. It's now about what can I do to help somebody else become a better angler. And people ask me all the time, they go, what do you do? And I give them the elevator pitch. And my elevator pitch is this. I says, I'm in the smile business. They kind of look at me and go, dentist, orthodontist? I says, no. I says, have you ever seen somebody in a picture holding a fish who isn't smiling? Everybody's always smiling to hold a fish. That's my job. My job is to make it easier for people who like to fish to be able to hold a fish and have a smile. That's what I consider my job to be.
So you're a charter captain also?
Charter captain also.
In Ohio? Yep.
I do. I fish down here in Ohio in the fall. I fish Detroit River, April and May, every day, two trips a day, every day for basically the last week of March through Memorial Day. Then I go up to Saginaw Bay in the summer, pretty close to my home. I fish there June, July, first part of August, take a couple weeks off, and then we'll come down here middle of October and be down here till the middle of November, and then we'll go back to Saginaw Bay to finish up the winter.
Okay, so you're mobile.
Mobile. I go where the best fishing is.
Okay. Fishing education.
Yes.
I mean, it seems like a cover-all thing, but isn't that what grandpas are for?
You know, it is, and I'm glad you say that because my fishing educator was my grandpa. He had a cabin up on the Isabel River up in northern Michigan, and my dad was still working, so my dad would come up on Friday nights and leave, you know, Monday morning. So I was up there all summer with grandpa, and grandpa was the one who really fired up my passion for the process of fishing, understanding wind and waves and current, and you know how different water color and water clarity makes a difference, and keeping records. I started keeping a fishing journal when I was 6 years old up at the cabin, and haven't stopped since.
And what kind of information, if you don't mind?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because I would tell you one of the things that most recreational anglers do wrong is they don't keep track of what happened while they were fishing, right? So, you know, weather conditions, wind, wave, sky, sunlight, water color, water clarity, moon phase, all those things. Then when you start catching a fish, you know, how fast was I going? How deep water was I fishing? How deep was my lure? What color was my lure? What kind of action was my lure? All those things, because what happens if you study these events over and over and over again, what you find is you start to see patterns emerge. That, you know, under these set of conditions, these are the best spots. Under these set of conditions, these baits work best. When the fish are in these areas, this is the way you should fish for them. So, you know, every time you go fishing, if you catch fish or don't catch anything, you have good information. You either learned what to do under those conditions, or you learned what doesn't work under those conditions. So I encourage guys all the time, or anglers all the time, write down what you did even on a day you caught nothing, and the next time those conditions are the same, don't do that.
I feel like I've seen you around a few places wearing a life jacket. Like at lunch, around a campfire, walking around in the middle of the day on dry land, and I thought maybe you had too many drinks. What's up with that? Have I seen you wearing a life jacket?
You have probably never seen me anywhere close to a boating or fishing situation where I didn't have an inflatable PFD on. Okay. I am 100.
What's up with that?
100% about that. You know, every year we lose multiple people to fishing incidents. And here's what I'm going to tell you. I don't care who you think you are. I don't care how good of a fisherman you are. I don't care how good of a swimmer you are. I don't care. If something happens in a boat, it's going to happen extremely fast, and you are going to be extremely surprised by it.
Really?
Yes.
That makes sense.
Put on a PFD. Here's what we know. I do a seminar, and I was asked to do this at the National Professional Anglers Association about 5 years ago because there was two boating accidents in the fishing world that resulted in loss of life during tournaments. About 81% of accidents that happen on a fishing boat happen while we're fishing, not while we're running. We have PFD use backwards. Almost nobody gets an accident when they're driving their boat. Almost nobody. You know when people go in the boat? I'm going over, Jim's got a nice fish, I reach down to net it, here comes a wake from another boat, I go ass over T-kill in the water.
Right.
I'm in the water. Whoops.
All of a sudden.
Okay, all of a sudden, right? I lean over the back of the boat to net a fish, here comes a wave, I go in, the boat's going away from me. Those are the situations that we go in. The number is just under 75% of the males that are found drowned either have their pants down or their zipper undone. Don't stand up to go to the bathroom. That's how accidents happen.
Yeah, that seems like a no-brainer, but everybody's done it.
Everybody's done it, right? I'm really, really proud, very proud, because I know I see more and more people every year, the places I fish, wearing inflatables, and I know for a fact, because we've been preaching this for 20 years, I know for a fact that we've had a positive impact, and if it saves one life, I'm good to go. So, yeah, put those PFDs on. When you've got a kid, I think Ohio's the same laws as Michigan. I think under 12, they have to. And if they see dad wearing it, they're going to wear it.
Right.
Make safety first priority.
Let's talk about a budget for somebody just getting into it. Let's say, for instance, somebody's got maybe a 16, 18-foot runabout. They've already got it. Realistically, between rods, reels, and terminal tackle, what could somebody get into beginning walleye fishing, money-wise?
So let's take somebody inland, right? Let's take them to some of the inland reservoirs we have here in Ohio, maybe some of the inland lakes. You know, I'm thinking Buckeye Lake, you know, Burr Run, I'm thinking those places, right? $300, right? A 6 foot three, 6.5 foot medium action spinning rod with a good quality 10 or 12 pound test, braided line with a monofilament leader, some crankbaits, some crawler harnesses, some clip-on weights, go fishing.
Right.
You can catch all kinds of fish doing that, right? One of my favorite ways to get people started in fishing is slip bobbers. You know, traditional bobbers that we grew up with, you know, they were fixed on your line and you can only fish about the length of your rod. Well, slip bobber, your line goes through it and it can slide up and down and there's a stop that you can move. You can literally bobber fish in 40 feet of water. Slip bobbers are a great way. You get yourself a slip bobber rig, you get yourself, again, that same setup, you buy some leeches and some crawlers, you find some bluegills, you find some crappies, you find some walleye, you throw a slip bobber, you set it a foot or two above their head, you're gonna catch all the fish you want to catch.
Right.
I would tell you, you know, $300-$400 for sure I can get somebody two setups ready to take two people fishing inland.
Cool.
Now you go to Lake Erie and we're trolling, that changes, right? Don't buy an expensive rod for trolling. You should never pay more than $35-$40 for a rod for trolling or running planer boards. Anytime you're gonna put a rod in a rod holder, it does not need to be a good rod. $30-$35, you're good to go. Too many guys spend a lot of money on stuff they're never gonna use or it's not right for what they're going to do. Find some help first.
Wait. Are you telling me that fishing tackle and accessories manufacturers would sell innocent fishermen and anglers things they don't need?
You know, it's hard to believe it's hard to believe that's the case, but that is the case, 100%. You know, I tell people like, well, who do I listen to, right? How do I get through the noise? Who do I filter? I tell people this. The more you listen to a seminar and the more you hear brand names, run.
Sponsored seminar.
Because a good seminar should be, hey, if you're going to go walleye trolling, here's what your rod needs to look like. It needs to be 8 to 8.5 foot long. It should have 9 guides on it. It should have a pistol grip. It should have a long rear handle so you can put it in a rod holder. It should have a trigger grip. You're going to want to buy a line counter reel, blah, 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 blah. You're going to want to buy this type of line, 13/1000 of an inch diameter, monofilament line, and you should buy some really good crankbait snaps. Now, invariably the question is, okay, what do you use? So now I say, well, here's how I rig. But for the information I gave you, you can go buy the right stuff no matter what brand it is.
Right.
When a guy instantly says, hey, you got, you know, I'm not going to name names, but you've all read the articles, right? I backed my one boat, I backed my Ford truck with my one boat into the lake and it came off my Shorelander trailer and I fired up my Mercury motor. And as soon as I got started, I turned on my Lowrance electronics.
Right.
I drove across the lake and used my Lake Master map chip to find a point. And I got in my rod locker and pulled out my Berkeley Hoochie Whopper with a 14-pound super-duper line and tied on a boogie-bloggy and cast out and caught a walleye.
Lance, what else is there somebody might want to know about what you do for a living?
I think people would be surprised how much of my job, this is what I do for a living, how much of my job is off the water. Everybody gets this perception all I do.
How do you teach fishing off the water?
Well, I have to write. I have to be in my studio creating video content. There's lots of research on new topics, right? Some of the new topics come out. I like to make sure, especially new topics, right? Forward-facing sonar and some of the new stuff that's coming out. I like to make sure, even with my experience, if I know about it, that I've kind of covered all the bases before I start to talk about it. Because I don't want someone to go, oh yeah, but you don't know about this. I want to make sure I know. So there's a lot of research. Now, I'm on the water 120, 125 days a year. I will do close to 200 charters in that time every year. But I spend, for every day I'm on the water, I spend 2 days off the water building content.
Right.
Writing, creating content, maybe talking to people, right? Maybe I go to seminars. There's techniques I don't know that I'll go to a fishing show that we're there as a retailer and a seminar speaker, and I'll, you know, one or two buddies, like, hey, can you sit here for an hour? I want to go see this. Because I know one thing about fishing. Here's what I know about fishing. You never stop learning. The minute you think you got it, the fish will go, oh no, you don't know anything. So I try to always stay up on what's going on, and I always try to find people who fish different than I do, fish different areas than I do, fish different presentations, or have different ideas about fishing than I do, because in there is a nugget that I'm going to stick into my way of fishing, and it's going to help me become a better angler. I don't think there's any better time for your soul than being on the water.
Why is that?
You know what? We need to be outside. We're outside creatures. The sun, the water, just all of that stuff is where we're supposed to be. You know, we're not supposed to be cooped up in an office. We're definitely not supposed to be in a cubicle. We're not supposed to be in a house. We're supposed to be outside. That's the way humans are wired, right? And there's something about connecting to nature. There's something about I'm trying to beat you. Just that process, even if you don't win, just that process of trying, testing yourself against a wild animal in its environment, there's something about that just triggers something in your head. They go, man, this is really, really fun. And when you're successful, now it really turns on the door. I mean, now you're really fired up. So I think being outside, enjoying that part of it, and really and then enjoying it with people you care about, I just think there's just something magical about being on the water you can't replace anywhere else.
Lance Valentine from Walleye 101 and Teaching Fishing, thank you so much
for
your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for
having
me.
I really learned a lot today.
I appreciate you having me, bud.
And hopefully, buddy, I'll see you somewhere around the lake.
Can't wait.
Thanks for joining me today for this episode of the Lake Effect Podcast. I'm your host and producer, James Proffitt. Executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. If you have questions or want to learn more about Lake Effect, visit wgte.org/lakeeffect. Until then, I'll see you somewhere around the lake.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.